Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dear Atari Anonymous, ever since my husband Luno returned from Earth with Asteroids, the new Atari home video game, he and the rest of the family do nothing but play Asteroids. Luno says Asteroids is good practice for his interplanetary flights. Tell me, dear Atari Anonymous, with everybody hooked on Asteroids, what on Earth is a poor Martian mother to do?
Wow, that felt very Coneheads. Would Coneheads have been done by then?
Yeah, 70, late 70s, yeah. I think so. Hey, everybody, welcome to Play Retro. This is Play Retro. It's a show about retro video gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Johnson, and I never use hyperspace. Know why? Because hyperspace is not the get-out-of-jail card you think it is. It's random, and it's stupid, and it will get you killed. No, I prefer to blow up my vectors head-on like a real spaceman confined to a tiny, pointy ship shaped like a pizza slice. And I like to shoot the top of the screen and screw you over at the bottom. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew.
Oh, hi, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I've got a bad case of the Blastoroids, just like in that commercial. And there's only one cure. Fatty more sit and one of those inflatable donut cushions. Now sit back. Relax and watch me rotate around in a circle for 30 minutes shooting space rocks and eliminating the threat of alien invaders. Suck my wedge-shaped vector ship! As Scott said, pew, pew, pew. More like Vectroids.
Vectroids. Yeah, we're not just going to talk about asteroids. We're going to talk about Asteroids Deluxe. We're going to talk about Blastoroids.
It's Blasteroids.
Blasteroids.
Yeah. There's a in the middle of that, right?
Yep. That was a game in Vegas a couple years ago for our contest that I should have won, but the knob was busted, and so we had to go try something else.
Some might say the knob was playing.
Yeah, you'd never know what that knob is going to do. Anyway, it's all about Asteroids today, and as you can tell, we have an excitement in our voice because this is a true classic in the arcade playing world, and man, I have too many memories to even count. We'll talk about a bunch of them, and also the background behind this fantastic series of games. Before we do that, though, I didn't do any retro shit this week. Nothing. I did do one thing. I did one thing, and it was not retro at all, although it made me feel right at home like a lot of retro games do. I played a lot of this game called Lightyear Frontier, which is you walking around in a giant mech on a planet, farming, collecting resources, unlocking new blueprints, selling stuff to a ship that comes down once in a while to buy your stuff, rain, snow, different biomes. Actually, I don't know if there's snow.
Well, that game would not exist if it weren't for the games we're talking about today, right? So, I mean, it's a retro ancestry.
Yeah. Everything retro comes back around to something modern. And this one scratches a very specific itch. It's on Steam for like $17. It's in early access, but I think it's in great shape already. So easy buy for me. It's also on Game Pass. So if that sounds interesting to you, try out Lightyear Frontier, which has nothing to do with Buzz Lightyear at all. There's none of he's not in there.
So you're here to tell me that you didn't spend the week dying Easter eggs with the kids.
No, we did do a little bit of that yesterday, but not the week. A week is too long being doing that. Forget it.
But why not? I mean, you got to make some masterpieces.
We died like a dozen eggs, and that was enough. We're good.
Well, You still smell like vinegar?
Yeah, and most of them cracked, and there's blue paint all over the kids' hands, and it won't come off.
Yes! And, yeah. You're Eastern. Good job.
That's right. What'd you do this week? You got a... everyone's talking about this Atari 400 Mini. Did this arrive yet, or when's it coming? What do you got going there?
So, it released yesterday.
Oh,
but,
shit. Jeez Louise.
Amazon was quick enough to ship it right to me because I pre-ordered it. Look at this.
Oh,
I got one of those. Oh. I got one of those little joysticks. Remember little Atari? Everybody had one of these Atari 2600 joystick. We plugged these things into a million different devices. It would work in different areas. It was a classic.
Yeah.
It was a classic. Got that single button and that. But here's the jam.
Yeah, let's see the console. Stuff. Let's see the unit.
Here's the console, man. Here is the unit. Oh, it is a mini. It is the mini. The 400, right? That's what it's called. The mini 400 from Atari. And this plays a lot of games like the tweet. We've been waiting for this. This 2600, it plays the 8-bit machines. I actually have a 800, I believe, XL, a real one. But this is like the really old school. It's got the membrane type keyboard on it. Everybody always asks me every time I get one of these minis, oh, does the keyboard work? No, it does not. It does not work. It's a little USB device, and there's no way, and you wouldn't want to type on it anyway.
Oh, it was a terrible, terrible keyboard back then.
Well, I hate membrane keyboards. I just hate them. They
awful.
They do that. Yeah. But look here, we got four USBs across the top, so you can across the front, so you can plug in all your controllers. You can buy extra controllers and paddles. Not only does this system come with some pretty classic Atari type games that would be on the 8-bit system, it also comes with the suggestion that, hey, why don't you put your own games on there?
Yeah.
So get your own ROMs, put them on there. And you can stick that in the back here where you got your USB-C for power,
yep.
And an HDMI, and you got a little plug. But this is very retro. It's that. Said, what color is this, Scott? What do you call that brown?
I mean, it's beige, but it's a dark beige. It's like green almost.
Yeah, right.
Like yellow, yellow green. The kind of thing you'd like an old medieval belt might be this color, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got your basic on here. Remember how to program basic? You can fire that up. Mm-hmm. You can do that. And you can play the game list here, which I was trying to pull up, but for some reason on the site, it doesn't show it. I definitely know it has Berserk, Star Raiders, and 25 classic Atari 8-bit games, including Star Raiders 2, Berserk, Lee Minor 2049, mm-hmm. and more.
Yep.
So it's compatible with the Atari 400 games, the 800 games, the XLE, and the 5200 games as well. So if it can play any of those, it can play those others. There.
How much does this thing run you? What's the price tag on this bad boy?
At launch, it was $119, and I pre-ordered it a while back, and I completely forgot about it. And, oh my God, can you push this little button? Does that do anything? There's a little button on the thing
to
put the cartridge in, but it looks like it would, but it doesn't do anything.
Oh man,
oh,
you never know what you're gonna
get. But yeah, $119, and it's pretty neat. It will only do 720p, by the way, though. Or 720, yeah. So not the 1080, but that's okay because these are usually most of these games have very large.
Yeah, these are old ass
blocky
games.
Pixels.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need anything special there.
Look good.
But look at this thing, Chad. Here's a close up of the old actual 400, and then this on top of it. You can get a size difference idea. Looks like it's very true to the look of it, the color of it are dead on,
yes.
How it's all arranged, the way that keyboard's tinted, all of it.
This was lovingly made. I actually did a unboxing video before we did this, but yeah, it's well boxed. Now mine got a little bit of a ding in packaging.
Thanks a lot, UPS.
Amazon.
Or whoever, yeah.
Thank you, Amazon.
Well, I don't think it was them. Well, it could have been, I guess, at the warehouse. But
well, they didn't package it well enough. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. They didn't put it in a big box with all. I always tell my friends to do this because, but I forget sometimes. You should always mark it as a gift. Otherwise, they may just ship out the box and just go, here you go. Put a little plastic around it. And go, here you go.
Yeah.
Here's the item. But if you say it's a gift, they'll put it in another box and they'll do a little better job.
It's also a rumor that you got some new headphones that are super retro. I haven't seen these yet.
Oh, I didn't get those out because it was the caveat. It was like, if I don't get the Atari Mini, because I was sweating it. I was like, oh, it's going to be close. It's going to be close.
Yeah.
I have some cool ass retro headphones, but they're boxed up right now.
Oh, I want to see those eventually. Are they like Walkman
stuff?
They
really are. Yeah, they're the old Walkman. It's got the orange ear pad stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, just a little metal head wrap. It's so old school retro, but it's Bluetooth.
Probably these right here, I'm guessing. Although these are wired, but like these old Sonys right here, I'm pulling up.
Let me see what they probably. Yeah, if you had some old Sonys like the Sony Walkman, those.
Yep, that's
pretty
it.
Much those.
Yeah.
But they're not marked. They're not marked as Sony.
Right.
But yeah, it's those.
You know what I like really want?
Metal band.
There's a whole, obviously retro right now is huge. Us making this show only being a small tip of the iceberg to what's out there for retro fans. What I want is what I'm putting up now, which is this set of headphones. These things look like they're made in the 40s. I want a pair of these real bad.
Oh, yes.
I don't even know why I want them, but I want
them. It looks like somebody busted out. Looks like somebody sawed one of those old metal microphones that you would see from radio shows and stuff.
Like cut it right in half.
And then they put it like on the outside. It's got that nice leather look. It's kind of looks like almost a combination of stuff you would have in the library if you grew up and went to school during like the 70s and the 80s and stuff. Looks kind of like that.
It's like something like if MacGyver was stuck in a room in the 70s with a leather couch and an old microphone.
Yeah.
He would build this.
This is why true recorded history is so important, because in popular culture, we'll lots of times bastardize stuff and it still looks retro, like what you just showed us. Mm-hmm. And none of those headphones would have come with like a microphone on the outside of it. Mm-mm. And so you might see these in the future and think, oh, that's how it was during that time period. But that wasn't accurate.
As far as I know, this seems like maybe they're just messing around, but
it looks cool. It's a really good artistic interpretation of that. And I love it.
Were you annoyed that you just barely got the 8-bit do NES thing? And now there's the
son of a butthole. I was so mad. So 8-bit do has come out with these branded mechanical keyboards.
Yeah.
And I looked at the Famicom one and the NES one, and I had it in my wish list. I wasn't sure if I was ready to pull the trigger. I got it for my birthday, the NES one. And I was super excited. I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's a really nice keyboard. Matter of fact, I'm using it right now.
Birthday, everybody. Birthday.
Yeah. And it's very cool. But then this week, I've only had this for like barely even a week. They come out with a Commodore 64 branded one, which is my love. It's my first love. You know, I never had an NES keyboard because it didn't exist, but I did have, the all-in-one bread bin that is the Commodore 64. And they've got this Commodore 64 mechanical keyboard that makes me love it so much. So I pre-ordered it. It's pre-ordered.
You're getting
it
comes that too. With, you're in the insane person. I love it so much that you're getting that.
I had to have it. What choice did I have? And my significant other actually said, well, now send back the NES one. I said, nope.
No, you want to have both. You want both those.
I get both.
That's right.
And so, you know, thank her for being patient with me and loving me anyway. But yeah, the Commodore 64 one looks so freaking cool. But they're about 119. The NES one is only $89. And the reason why is because the Commodore 64 one comes with a joystick, like the old school joystick like you would have with the Commodore 64.
It's got the buttons, those two big oversized buttons, plus the joystick, right?
They all come with oversized buttons. They just sell these programmable big side buttons with all of their keyboards, and they're all, you know, similar looking. And so you just...
Right. So you get that plus that round knob, red top joystick you had with the old Commodore games. Yeah.
Exactly. And if I wanted... I've got a mouse coming with a D-pad. For the NES, it was
mouse.
On backwards,
so. Hold on, a mouse with a D-pad on it.
Yeah, so we talked about it.
I've seen this. Yes, NES mouse.
Yeah, it's
mouse.
Got a little thumb D-pad.
Let's see. Yeah, here it is. So this is also them, though, right? This is 8-bit do. Yeah.
Yes, that is the matching mouse that comes with that 8-bit do NES keyboard, and that's where you use your D-pad at.
There it is, Chad. You know. Take a look at that.
Yeah.
Now, how do you? Could understand this.
I've heard it kind of works like a third mouse wheel. I haven't had it yet, but I heard it's kind of like, you know, your mouse wheel. I think you can actually rub it. I don't know if you can rub it. I don't know. We're going to find out when I get it.
All right. I'm curious. When you get it, we'll talk about it, because where else are you going to talk about it? It's the perfect place to
talk. Yeah. You got to have it.
All right. Well, there's that. Let's do this.
Shall we play a game?
We shall indeed. We're going to talk today about Asteroids Deluxe, and beyond, and way beyond. In fact, there's a newer game out that a lot of people don't even know about that I think is worthy of your time and worth playing, and is so really good on Steam Deck. We'll get to all of that in a little bit, but we're going to talk about the original Asteroids. It's the best-selling Atari game of all time, by the way. If you do all of the adding up of the numbers, Asteroids is responsible for a vast part of why Atari did great in arcades and would continue to have that name do well at home and everything else. It was a big deal. The game came out in 1979, so we are just prior to, you know, the 80s and things are about to take off. It was all in vector. In fact, if anything, I would say, now I'll show our little intro screen for people real quick here. It's some of the lightest vector ever. It's very faint. Have you noticed that when you go play it? It's really weird.
Yes, I have. It's like the lines are very small. I don't know why that was. I don't know if there was some kind of question about the vector monitor being able to render. But lots of times these were in really dimly lit places. So it was probably fine. It was actually probably better than it glaring at you. And there may have been some places you could adjust it. I don't know. But I'll tell you who would know.
Who?
And not to get too sidetracked off this, but this week, I like to usually state my sources and stuff. If you've never seen the YouTube TNT Amusements Inc., these guys have been around forever, and I've kind of seen some of their videos, but their videos on the restoration videos on Asteroids, and I think they did one on Asteroids Deluxe and Blasteroids, is amazing. Those guys are so much fun. That's TNT Amusements Inc. You can go afterwards. I'll say it at the end of the show, too, so you don't forget.
Yeah.
But those guys know some stuff, and that was fun looking inside. And I think maybe just speculation that it was probably that it needed to be faint for that reason.
If you fired it up, dark, you'd hear this. Oh, the memories.
Yeah,
this is okay. By the way, I don't know what the deal was back then with, and then it would get faster and faster, just like Space Invaders. It was the same thing.
It was. It was the heartbeat. Space Invaders was before this and informed what they would do here. And yes, exactly. It's like, how do you create that, you know, that feeling of, oh, shit.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
Bum, bum, bum.
And what's funny is like even today I will play and buy games that are space based 2D in effect, you know, flat sort of experiences that where I have to shoot down a bunch of stuff coming at me. Think, you know, Geometry Wars or any number of other dual stick shooter. And I always go, oh, boy, I sure love those dual stick shooters. But I can trace that enjoyment all the way back to this thing. It is like the proto version of that. Now, it used buttons. It didn't have sticks. There was no analog. It was, you know, press a button to go to rotate left, rotate right, thrust with another one, hyperspace, never use it, that kind of thing. And by the way, you want to hear the scariest sound I've ever in a game that used to keep me up at night? This is right here. Listen to this. Hold on. Not that one.
It's pretty scary.
No, it's not that. I don't have that one. The little tiny guy.
Oh, yeah. The little one is super fast.
He's really high-pitched, super fast. He also has way better aim than the fat ship. And they're a nightmare later on because you get him constantly, and it gets real hard. I need to get this diatribe out of my system about hyperspace real quick. So the way the thing was laid out, you had rotate left, rotate right. You had thrust, and you had fire. And you had hyperspace. And the hyperspace button was kind of off by itself, so you wouldn't accidentally hit it. So that wasn't really a problem. But hyperspace, the whole idea was, oh, there are way too many asteroids that are all closing in on me. I need to get out of here. And so I'm going to use this thing that only has three charges or whatever it was. And it will get me out of, it's a get out of jail card, right?
Right.
I can get out of here. I may not even had charges. Maybe it was just always there. I don't remember.
I don't remember. I've never used all of them because I usually don't use them.
You shouldn't, because here's why. So all these asteroids, they're all coming at you. They're closing in. You're like, oh, I'm going to die. If I don't want to die and lose a ship, I'm going to hyperspace. You hit hyperspace. It does not just send you to a nice open little area where there is no activity. It sends you somewhere completely randomly. And oftentimes, because the screen is full of chunks of rock flying through space,
right?
There's no place where a rock isn't about to be or already at that you can transport to. So hitting hyperspace, especially at times in this game where you need it, will send you straight to the center of an asteroid and you will die immediately. It is the worst, like, bonus button / I need an extra little kick to get out of the way kind of idea in a video game in the history of games. And I say this as somebody who reveres asteroids. I love asteroids. But that hyperspace button, now here's the biggest problem, Brian. Okay, I explain why it sucks, and I never used it. But then I started to think, man, that means every arcade machine had to have circuitry and wiring and buttons and everything all laid out and ready to rock, where you had to wire that thing to have a hyperspace button that nobody in their right mind should ever push for any reason at all. And it pissed me off, that damn thing. So F hyperspace. It sucks to this day. It's the worst. All right. That's all.
That's interesting. So we know. Okay. So this was the time when you were you were trying to get people to play a game, but you were trying to get them off as fast as possible. So the hyperspace thing, I'm curious to know, because I watched some people who played it for days. People got really good at this game where they would just like they could play for days. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to know if any of them used hyperspace and any other things. I don't think so. There's all kinds of theories on how you should play at this most simple game, which is just, you know, a game about inertia. It's about splitting of asteroids. So you have three different levels of asteroids. You get the largest asteroid, you get a medium size one, a small one. All gives you different points based on the size. The easier to hit, the less points. But the first time you hit the first one, it splits into two, and then you hit those two, and they split into two, and they get smaller, faster, and they get more annoying.
Yeah.
But like you said, you got your rotate left and right buttons, and then you got your thrust and your fire buttons. My personal thing to do, though, I stayed in the center. When I did my intro earlier, I hardly ever used thrust.
Oh, because constantly use thrust. Just, that's crazy to me. Go ahead. Keep talking.
Right. I only did that when I would get near the end of like when you first start with the big asteroids and stuff, I just stayed in the middle. But near the end, you know, where you got to chase down something or the UFOs start coming out. Yeah, you might have to use thrust. You might have to move a little bit, especially the little guy. He's going to come after you. I use thrust very sparingly. It's mostly just rotating in circles and firing. And occasionally I've tried to use the hyperspace. And I'm with you. It doesn't seem to work well. And I'm not sure which revision I was using, because they did do tweaks. So these ROMs had tweaks that would send out, you know, and I think I played revision 3 or 4 when I played this week.
Yeah.
And I found the hyperspace to be fairly fair.
It got better as time went on. And I think in Deluxe, which we'll get to in a minute, Deluxe actually tried to put you in empty space when you hyperspaced. So there was
I think there's only a shield in Deluxe. I don't think it actually happened.
What am I thinking of? Am I thinking of...
maybe you're thinking of Ed Logg's Golden Asteroids machine.
Maybe, but I think what I'm thinking of is... I want to talk about that too, but I think what I'm thinking probably is this new thing. I've been playing a bunch of that, and it does this a lot better. I played a lot of Asteroids this week, just kind of back and forth, different stuff. Here's the other thing I want to credit the game for. There is, in modern gaming or other games I've played throughout, you know, the years, there are a lot of games where you drive or move or navigate in relativity to your left and right buttons. So let's take a game like Micro Machines. That game was with a D-pad, right, back in the day.
Yeah.
And if I want to go left, if I'm facing up, I want to go left. Well, then I'll go left both literally and figuratively on screen. If my car has gone up and turned a corner and is now coming down on the screen, left is actually turning it right. It's still turning left relative to the car, but in my view, I'm now going right. That's a thing that will throw players at first when you're not used to the controls and you're going to have to play a bunch even just to get the hang of it, right?
Right.
This game permanently instilled in me the muscle memory to have that. I don't ever struggle with that with any game of any kind. It can be a little driving game. It can be anything. And it just, to me, it's intuitive to know, well, when I'm going this way, I go right. Like, my brain doesn't fart on that at all. And I know people who really struggle with that. So I have Asteroids to thank for that control scheme, because without it, I'm not sure I would possess that either, you know?
Yeah, and no hyperspace in Micro Machines, by the way.
No, thank the Lord on high. Yeah. The other thing I want to say about thrust, you mentioned the game, or you said something to the effect that the game is about the physics. The physics of inertia. And that's the other thing that I love about the game and the history of the game, is that no other game at the time, anyway, was giving me that feeling of tap it a little, move a little. You'll drift and slow. If you're going too fast, turn the ship around, tap it a couple times. You know, maybe the closest to this would be like Lunar Lander had that.
Yeah.
But that was more gravitational.
If that was everything about Lunar Lander. Everything was that.
That was the whole game. Yeah. That's
fighting
true.
Gravity. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. But in this particular case, the half the fun for me was zooming around and that feeling of like precision touch myself into the best drift and then slow it down before I do a thing. And I knew this wasn't like. Newtonian actual space physics. I mean, I know.
Yes.
But I knew enough to know that this was well beyond what games were doing at the time. And it still to this day kind of impresses me when I play it. It's like, wow.
Yeah, this was one of the first games that I noticed that I was getting into like a groove. Like you would just... It's like skateboarding or anything else like that. Is you kind of fall into this groove, and like I didn't feel like that in Space Invaders and different games. I felt Lunar Lander. It always felt like abrupt moments. It didn't feel like you were like going zen. But that this game you could totally just space out literally. And I think it's the reason why some people can play this thing for days because they basically just tap into. Tap into the rhythm of it and the motion of it, and they can just predict everything. And later ROMs of this, I'm not sure how much they tweaked the hyperspace, but it did feel like that it was tweaked. Maybe I was just getting better. But it would literally your ship would disappear. It would seem like for seconds, you're like, uh-oh, it's whapping my ship. Did the game crash?
Yep.
But what it's doing is it's looking for, I'm assuming it's looking for an opportunity to respawn in a place that wouldn't get you killed immediately. It would give the player
another chance. Yeah, that was the idea. Yeah. And it just was in the beginning anyway. And the machines I had in my house. So I had two cocktail versions of this in our house growing up. And I had a stand-up version in the garage. And I was, as you might imagine, a very popular kid in junior high when these things arrived. Because they had free play on. Everyone knew my dad ran arcades. They would all rush to my house to play Asteroids all night.
And it's time to play some Asteroids.
They really did. And it was like, I had an Asteroids machine, Missile Command, and like, what's the tank one? My brain just died.
Tank.
What's it called? The Battlezone.
Tank. Oh, Battlezone. Oh, yeah. Oh, Battlezone was awesome. So, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. These three were always lined up in the garage somewhere as stand-ups, and I had the cocktails around, and they were really, really popular. I was not. I thought I had friends. They were all buttholes. They just wanted to play. The kids would come over that would never talk to me otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Like
some
like jock kid or some rich kid or whatever. They'd just be like, hey, can I come to your house and, hang out? We can hang out. I'm like, yeah, man, we could hang out. You guys are cool, and I'm not that cool. Let's hang out. And they would come over, and I realize, oh. And because as soon as those machines like went back out to an arcade, they were like gone. Never saw those kids again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can understand that.
Douchebags, Brian. Douchebags. They're douchebags. Just say it. They're douchebags.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say that I didn't go over to my friend's house to play on his Apple II, but I did we went outside too.
Yeah,
so I guess I wasn't such a douchebag.
Yeah, you touched grass with your friend. You went out and did things that weren't just, taking advantage of the cool video games.
No. We also were friends in general, but boy, did I like playing with his Mac.
Of course.
Apple II.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. So anyway, the point being, it was a huge influence for me and everybody around me. Let's talk about Ed Log.
Let's talk about Ed Log.
He made it. He programmed it. Lyle Rains designed it. These are your guys. These are your dudes. And they are famous for this. This game went on to be like so revered. They still study it. It's still like a thing where you go, so it's like Asteroids or you want to do this like Asteroids. Or it had such a big impact, such a big influence on the industry, which was obviously very young, right? 79. This is very early in things. And I just don't think it gets enough credit now. Like Asteroids is,
and they didn't.
The bomb.
I don't think they realized how big a hit it was. Obviously, because they ended up having to they had to pull other machines to like Lunar Lander. They had to pull machines. It was like people still want the Asteroids. Mm-hmm. What are we gonna do?
Yep.
And it's like pull those Lunar Landers. We're gonna ship it out and put in some Lunar Landers. And so,
and we're not even gonna talk about it. We're not gonna even talk about it, but. There are many other Asteroids little spinoff things that happen, not just Atari 2600, like a commercial at the top of the show, but there was an N64 game. There was a PlayStation game. There were all these weird versions of that game. We're not going to do those today, but just know that retro gaming is littered with attempts to do a new Asteroids. Like, here you go. Here's a new one. Hey, N64 fans, you want some blurry textures and some really shitty looking ships? Good news. Got you covered.
Good news. Yeah. Now, Ed Log, this is not our first time we've talked about him. He did do programming, and this was his first game. that he did. We've talked about him on Gauntlet. We've talked about what else did we talk about? We talked about another game that he was involved with too. Was Centipede? That was it.
Centipede.
Yep. Millipede.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's legend. That is Ed Logg, who did Asteroids. And I'm curious. I meant to go back and really dig deep into what code they were programming on this thing. So I'm curious.
Oh, that'd be super fun to learn, right? Like,
yeah.
What do you? I assume it was like assembly or something real basic. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Basic.
Get it. Here's a picture of him as a very young man standing next to the gold one. This is
the gold machine.
Yep. Look at that. Look at that screen with the gold. It's pretty cool.
You think that's real gold? You think that's
no?
I think it's
painted. Is what that is. That ain't real.
Yeah. It looks like they melted down C-3PO and
yeah, a little bit.
Turn him into an arcade cabinet.
Yeah. R2, you've got me in trouble for the last time. R2.
Thrust.
But look at that. I used to dress like this when I was a teenager. I used to wear these white pants.
Well, no wonder. No, you didn't have no friends.
Yeah. No. Right. Why would they want to hang around with that?
No, I love that. We all wore that. That's what you wore.
Now, this guy's like, for his time, especially just like a little super genius man. And I really like him. I don't know that much, though, about Lyle Rains. Never really looked into him.
No, I didn't mind too much either. And, I learned a lot about actually just that era of the arcade. Because I don't usually go back to 79. A lot of my arcade experience was a little bit later. I probably got really big into the arcades about the time they were having trouble.
Yeah.
And so the stuff I was learning is stuff like some of the first Asteroid games you may have gotten had the owl eye coins slots. I don't know how your arcades have, but most of the arcades I had the slots. So you took your coin and you dropped it in, it slid down through there. But they had the old owl eye ones, like you would use like at if you would
go to, really like you put them like flat
like you go to Kmart and you put in your coins and you'd smash them against the owl eye and you'd like just let it drop
like a laundry mat is how that stuff works. Washing machine
So that was like foreign to me when they were talking about that kind of stuff. And I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah, those were the times. So we would go down to this store called, sorry if you guys hear any weird noises. My bathroom's getting built. See if you can hear this. Hold on. Oh, he stopped.
Your bathroom is getting built. So you're adding a bathroom on?
Well, it's plumbed for it and have had an empty, unfinished. There it is. Hear it? It sounds like a fat guy farting. Anyway. My brother-in-law's in town. He does this stuff for
fun. It's going to sound exactly the same when you get done with it, right?
Yeah,
this is good.
Get used to that sound because that's what's going to happen. But we've just for 10 years we've lived here and we're like, we got to finish that bathroom. We're finally going to do it. When I'm in here playing retro games and I gotta take a one or a two, I can just walk over there.
One or two. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Anyway, apologies for that. But the point is, what was my point? My point was, I don't remember what you said.
We were talking about the owl eyes and talking about the difference.
Yeah. So when I was in the thick of it, they had switched over to the slot. Drop it in, go down. That had a better mechanism in terms of its readability and got jammed less. So this is a little insider info. My dad used to hate the flat coin ones because the way those mechanisms work would get stuck all the time. And kids would also try to do that trick they'd seen on TV of drilling a little hole in a quarter, putting a string on it, drop that down with some fishing string, pull it out and try to get free credits. By the way, rarely worked. It almost only just gummed it up. It's garbage. It's terrible. And when you do it with the flat ones, you could get away with it more and jam it more. Then the slot ones were changed. So the slot ones still had a jam. They were still capable of jamming, getting stuck, having issues. They were still kind of fiddly, but nothing near as bad as the flat wall coin drop.
Yeah. And it's funny. I didn't realize until I was watching these deep dives on this TNT amusement guys, like the different types of coin collection, like they would have, because early on, apparently, I guess you drop the coin. I guess it just, it fell wherever it did in like a bucket or something, I suppose, inside the machine. And so if a technician or you hire some teenager to come run your arcade, he could go in there and, if he had to set something, he could open it up and he'd have access to, a bucket of coins just sitting there,
Yeah, that's basically true. That's what you'd do. And the way we did it is the slot ones where you drop it in, they would have a key on the side. You'd open that up, and it used to be that the bucket was much higher and easier to get to if you were a skeevy kid who wanted to steal something.
Right.
Now you had to go, it was deeper in, This thing was slotted in with these, like, I don't even know how to describe it. They're almost like off ramps from the coin slots.
Yeah, yeah.
They went down these metal shafts, almost like air ducts almost. It's like air ducts. It was crazy. And then they would go down into this box, and that box had another key on it. And the you'd have to open that, and then you'd get your money.
There's a game in itself for the arcade owner, right?
Yeah, it was like two-factor authentication, but physical, you know? It's really weird.
I really love watching these videos, though. Man, we don't talk as much as we did when we first started about arcade games and learn all about the PCB boards and then how all that stuff functions and, you know, how many of those probably were shipped with shitty capacitors and shitty power supplies. And, you know, it was one of the first things a lot of these restoration guys do is they seem to replace that kind of stuff. You know, how are you going to handle all the locking mechanisms like you're talking about?
Yeah.
Do you want to still have that like original, or do you want to do a bunch of stuff, change it around?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's as much art in the preservation of arcade games, because it's not like when we go pick up a console and I open it up and I can go look at the schematics, you know, online, I can pretty much tell you exactly where everything's going to be with the exception of revisions and stuff. But for the most part, I know what I'm getting into. The arcade machine seemed like it was a little bit of voodoo.
Yeah, no, it totally was. Not only that, you had a real danger when, sorry, he's really drilling.
Yeah, he's going to town. Well, he must be drilling the poop chute.
Mr. Driller over there. No, but we had this thing. This is a story I've told somewhere else, maybe even here. I don't remember. But my dad. Yeah. So when you'd open these doors, there were a lot of electronics in mechanisms. It wasn't just a simple like lever that would hit when the coin went down and then it would register as working. Tons of wires, tons of stuff, electricity all up in this door panel. And so how we got free play at home, you wouldn't do it in the dip switches. Some games did support that, but most didn't. So what you had to do is open the door or keep it unlocked, turn the key around so it had like a blocker so you couldn't shut it all the way. So if we ran out of credits, we'd open it up, take your index finger, and the little metal thing that the coins trip, you had to manually go back there and go and tickle in the numbers of things you wanted. The problem with that is he's got me, who's, I don't know, 10 years old or whatever.
Right.
Doing this next to extremely high voltage wires.
I know. And you ever been around the back of a CRT monitor, which some of them were like easily accessible, like the back of those things.
Yeah, they were crazy. And the thing about it was, though, this time we were at a Pizza Hut and he was emptying quarters from this Pizza Hut machine. And I think it was Pac-Man or something. I don't remember. And his back was facing the counter of the Pizza Hut. And they used to have these counters where you'd come in and they would sit you. It's back and you could sit down at a pizza. It was like a regular restaurant. And his back was facing this counter. And this dude had just put two pizzas on the counter for us as just a freebie. It's like, hey, thanks for coming. Here you go. This machine's doing great. We love it. Blah, blah, blah. So they give us free pizza all the time. And my dad was like down on his haunches, kind of squatted in front of this thing. And he had the panel down and he's in there fiddling around. And his left hand touched electric stuff in the door panel thing that connected to the transformer, and it hit him so fast and hard that all I saw was my dad fly out of the back of this arcade machine, slam his back into that counter, and knock one of the pizzas into his lap.
And oh my god!
It shocked him that bad. It was like it was kind of.
Did he play it off and just eat the pizza?
We ended up eating the pizza, but his hair was like all over the place, it like stuck out and stuff.
So it was like a comedy. I got you.
It was like
so
it was a cartoon, like a dude. It reminded me of some cartoon or something. But it was it was a hoot, and I'll never forget it. And the pizza was amazing. It's back when they make good pizza. Those were the days.
It's so funny, you know, our perspective of when you're that age and stuff, and you know, getting free pizza and stuff like that. And I remember whenever we would go to the arcade, and there was always the machines were always breaking down. So, you know, the there was always like one guy walking around the arcade, just keeping everything functioning. Right. And Aladdin's Castle, by the way, is where I often went.
We had one, too. I love that place. It was great.
Yeah. So if a machine robbed you for whatever reason, this coin's not working, coin mechanism is not working properly, he'd come over and he'd do it. Like you said, he'd take that little key, he'd turn it and he'd pop it open. He goes, tick, tick, tick. He'd put his finger back there and he'd like tickle it a couple of times. Ding, ding, ding.
Just give it to
a little coin. Start, bing, 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 bing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's such a good feeling. It's like, oh, that's free shit right there.
No, it's like magic. It's like magic when they did that. And all they're doing is just flicking that little lever. And as long as you're smart and knew where it was.
Yeah.
It sounds like a sex move. But as long as you knew what you were doing, You were fine.
It always looked like the coolest move, though. It was like, this guy's so cool. But he was really just my dealer. Let's face it.
He's just your dealer.
He was my dealer.
He's making sure you get your hit. Now, here's the other thing about that. People always say, why was there this shift in the mid-80s through today, really? Well, actually, today it's more like swiping cards and stuff. But for a long time there, it was a complete conversion to tokens, token machines, and then putting tokens in these machines. And it's a simple answer. Here's why they did it. Even the Nickelcade that I go to, where I pay a little fee to get in, and then I can just get big wads of nickels.
Right.
The point is that the place controls the coins, not you bringing them in from the outside. Because bringing them from the outside meant, and this is all stuff I learned through this process, you couldn't guarantee the condition of a quarter. So some of them had been rubbed down too much from being in the same pocket for too long or whatever, and they wouldn't have the same shape, so it wouldn't register right. That would be one problem. The other problem would be you had old gum on your quarter, and it was sticky and awful, and that jammed up in there, and now the whole mechanism's jacked, and you got to have somebody come in and fix it. And in that case, it was my dad fixing it. And so because you couldn't control the condition of quarters to go in, that's why the whole token thing even happened. That's the whole point, because the machine is
so
full
you're
of
telling
coins.
Me
yeah.
It's not because they were trying to get me to leave the arcade with coins in my pocket that I never spend.
No, that's a side effect and to them a benefit, but that wasn't the original point. The original, I mean, that's what's great about capitalism is you figure out ways to screw people after you've solved a problem, right? So what they did, it was literally like, and they did it in other ways too. I'll get to that in a second, but it was to say that, well, we control the coins, therefore we're not going to have the jams, we're going to have less people have to employ, like all this savings of time and people and money. And it worked. Then they started going, well, if they don't finish that, that means they'll have to come back here. And when they're here, they'll probably buy more because they're right here. Okay, so there's that one bit. And you see it now in microtransactions. Like, for $4.99, buy enough gems to do a thing. Oh, but I'm short 2 gems. I guess you got to spend another $5.99 to get enough gems. Like, all of these kinds of ways we nickel and dime people in gaming today, they have their roots in this shit. For real.
Yeah.
The other thing go ahead.
I was lucky to get in and out for the most part before the whole coin slide ticket system stuff really took hold. Most of what I remember is going in and, you know, taking, it was like, if you bought $5 worth of tokens, then you would get this many tokens. It was actually a greater value than if you had just a dollar at a time. Mm-hmm. If you put $20, it was even a greater savings. Mm-hmm. And so I would go in there and slap my little 20 in there, and the thing would go, whole bunch of coins. And you're like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah. Next time you open your phone and you see an app say best value $9.99 for the most gems or whatever, just know that that's kind of where that started. And that helped with the transition. In fact, I think even our arcade, my dad owned it. I think we did this for a while where when we got the tokens happening, we would give you 5 tokens for a dollar, like you were saying. So you get 5 of these tokens, and in people's minds, they're like, it's like an extra quarter. And it kind of is.
I'm rich.
But you still gave us a dollar, and we gave you 5 fake coins that cost less than a dollar. You know what I mean? Like, it was this weird mind game. And and then we just kind of went out.
And we know where you're going to spend them.
Yeah.
We know where you're going to spend them tokens.
Yeah. We know what you're, because you have nowhere else to go. And if you were a chain, cool, you'd go to another location, but it was the same issue. This Nickelcade that we go to, they're actual nickels, but again, they maintain the source of nickels. So you could bring nickels from the outside, but who's carrying around nickels? Nobody. No one has a bunch of nickels, right? So what you would do, it kind of has the same effect now. So if I go to the Nickelcade in West Valley and I put a bunch in there and I walk away with like another 10 nickels, I'm not using those for anything else until I go back to that place.
That's right.
So it's like tokens all over again, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't have any of those old tokens, Taz. I wish I did. Oh, man, do I wish I had that stuff. Oh,
one of our faithful here, one of our friends of the show sent me a whole butt ton of Aladdin's Castle tokens.
Oh, that would be awesome, fresh. Dude. I would love
that. I have to break them out one day and show you how sweet they are. They're mint.
Ours were, I don't even remember the name of arcade, American Amusement, whatever it was. And it had our own logo crap on it. The only thing I really salvaged, this is so sad, just thinking about it pisses me off, but I really only salvaged 3 things from that entire era because Have I told the story about when my dad died? He had a whole, five storage places. Yeah, and they were big, complete stand-up machines, all custom-built, brand-new CRTs in them. Gone. Somebody auctioned them. They're gone.
Just
makes me sick. But I have a sit-down cocktail in that room. It doesn't work, but it's an old... not Galaga. Mooncresta. Two-sided, cocktail model. And then the one he custom built out of wood, I've shown you pictures before. I have that in the garage. That's got like Kamikaze 3 or some hacked ROM in it. I'm going to clear that thing out and actually do something with it. But I've got those two things. And then the header art for Lock and Chase that I designed as a 14-year-old. I have one of those. I would have had 300 of them if I knew about the storage units, because that's the game that we got stuck with when everything crashed. But I have that over here somewhere. And that's it.
I know as much regret as you have, you're lucky that it was handled for you. You had a lot of living to do between then and now.
Oh, man. Plus it was 2000. The year 2000 when my dad passed away. And had I known about it, we would have tried to do something. But I don't know if I was even in the mental place to know how to organize that or deal with it. Today, no problem. Yeah, I'd be like, eBay, freaking, I'm going to take five of them myself. I'm going to make custom ones.
You start a YouTube channel about Scott's giant collection of warehoused.
Yeah, we'd do a huge series on this. We'd give shit away to our listeners. Like right now, perfect time. But that didn't exist in 2000. I wasn't doing that.
No,
it's a bummer, but it is what it is. And I'm really glad I have the bits that I have, and got a lot of old pictures and crap like that. I should share more of those. But it was a weird time, dude. Now let's dive into Dave Shepard's life. Dave Shepard, you're like, Wayne, I don't know who that is. Well, good news.
Dave Shepard.
He made
behind Asteroids Deluxe, right?
He made a better Asteroids, in my opinion. And it sounded like this. Now, you might hear that and go, did he though? Because
isn't this the same?
Aren't those sound effects kind of annoying compared to the other ones? Like, let's do a direct comparison just for fun here. So that's the shooting in this. Here it is in this. I kind of miss the original sounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were better.
Do you know, we've talked about this guy before?
Have we talked about Dave Shepard?
Briefly. Area 51. Remember doing that one?
The shooter game with the gun. Yeah.
Yeah, a little shooter game. That's right. Yes.
This is that guy?
So same guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Same guy.
Let's talk about Asteroids Deluxe. This game came out. Now, the problem with capturing video of this is very hard, because part of the upgrade for it visually was twofold. One, the asteroids moved, they rotated. And the background, the game was projected. So it had a mirror. It's so hard to explain how this worked. It had a mirror image of what looked like some space art. And in the space art was like half of a planet and a little curve of a moon and other debris and nebula colors and that kind of thing. And it gave this like weird three-dimensional look to everything, as if this game was being played in that space. But that was just art being projected with a mirror it was the mirror, right?
And then you're right. So I had to dig into it, because it got very confusing about exactly what was going on. The CRT is mounted in the bottom of the arcade machine, kind of flat.
Right.
And then there is a two-way mirror that is facing the player, and that's kind of angled a little bit so that you can see the CRT that's laying flat. And behind that two-way mirror is like a cardboard painting of asteroids. So when you try to emulate this, you're just going to see... you're just going to see the lines, the vector lines.
Right.
But arcade, you would see that. Now, there's some emulation out there that has went the extra mile and has added back the graphics in the background. There's like some more recent versions that you can purchase and buy that adds all that stuff back to it. So it looks like that. The thing I was kind of confused about is there's a couple explanations of exactly how it looks. Like the original one we talked about is pretty much just all white vector lights, right?
Right.
This one apparently had like a transparent, either had a transparent film of blue or used a black light. I'm not sure if those both existed, but I've heard people say about both ways. But essentially what you're trying to do is create instead of like a white light, kind of a blue a light. And it was much brighter because you could make it brighter, right?
Yeah, instead yeah.
of
It was much brighter. More. I remember had settings on the dip switches where you could really crank it up, and they almost were neon at some point when we had one. It's like a neon white.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was really cool. It also had these like homing ship things that you could blow up. They weren't asteroids. They were like these weird geometric shapes, and then the shapes would chase you.
Yeah.
So they mixed that sort of stuff up quite a bit. Still had some of the...
I call them the Borg, but they're called something else. But I call them the Borg because they come down, they're big cube ship. They're made up of diamond shapes, and you shoot it. And then the diamond shapes chase you, and they get smaller yet again when you shoot those. And very asteroids-like, right?
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing's very asteroids-like. But the way they follow you is actually kind of a cool... It's kind of freaky. I don't like it. I don't like being followed by a ship. But it has the same old... They have the same old big fat ship that comes out and shoots randomly. It's not much of a shot. But then the little one's very good and fast. And for the most part, it sticks to these ideas. And you're right. This one had a shield rather than hyperspace.
More useful.
Way more useful. Way. Yeah. Dave Shepard, well done. F the other guys for their bad idea.
Right. And I like the shield because I'm trying to remember, the shield responds differently in different situations. I think if you pull up the shields at the very last second before an asteroid hits you, it actually knocks you back. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That is cool that it knew to do that, because I couldn't think of any other instance in the game that already had that physics in it. So I was like, oh, so they must have programmed this to make use of that collision. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah,
imagine
pushback in a game like now. You don't even think about it. That's just a thing you see in games. There's a hitbox. There's like a feeling of a momentum and inertia, like you say, action reaction. This game was able to tap into that feeling without really having to tell us. We just kind of felt it. Mm-hmm. And both these games are like that. But this one in particular, I felt like just really added something to it. And it's not that common, not today anyway, where someone will take over a project and improve so well on what the previous designer did. But I feel that way about this game. I think this is a superior game. I have many positive feelings for the OG Asteroids, but I don't know. There's something about this one I would actually rather put my quarters in if they're next to each other. I'd just rather play it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. The playability is better. However, you, like me, probably played a later ROM version of this, because the first ROM they came out with, they were trying to fix all the things they saw in the first one. And one of the things that they didn't care for is how good people got at the original one.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They didn't want people hanging around. So they made it a hell of a lot harder.
Yeah.
And remember, this is again,
we're at that time where what's the goal of arcades? It's to bleed your pocket dry. That's the goal. So,
yes.
Like it or not, nostalgia or not, they're always trying to up that. It's like, well, how do we keep them with one quarter and play less and then have to put two in? Like, this is the thinking of an arcade owner and a arcade game maker. And they did that. This game's a lot harder.
And it's even talks about it. Did I send you that link? I watched a video that was basically the marketing material they sent to the arcade owners. And they talked about it. It was very skeezy. It felt so skeezy to listen to. It's like, to make sure that your people don't stay on it too long and maximize profits and stuff. And I was like, wow, you guys were real shits. I mean, I knew it, but I never heard you say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
and it was like, I don't think I like that.
Yeah.
But it was, they released some revisions very shortly after the first release because it was just way too hard. People were, it's like, well, I just won't even play it. And They were. I think this is the time, weren't they starting to do the? Oh, this is the time when they started preparing users that we were going to be going to two coins.
Yeah.
For gameplay, so you could actually double up, and I think get extra play if you went ahead and put two coins.
If you put two coins in, you got extra ships immediately.
Yeah. So they were working towards training. They talked about this in the video too. They talked about training your customers to get used to the idea of using two coins.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you bastards.
You dirty bastards. No, it really was. No matter what, you got to remember this era and these things. This was a business. NBA Jam famous for being, seems like you're doing awesome until the last 4 minutes of the game. And then suddenly the computer's superhuman. Like that wasn't anything that you could help. It was the business model kicking in.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because as a kid, I didn't think about that. Wasn't thinking about that at all. I just was like, where can I get a quarter, Mom? And it reminded me, that's what kids do when they play Fortnite or they're in, that's not a good example. That's mostly cosmetics. But when they're in a game like, some gotcha game that they're super hooked on their phones, and they're like, Mom, can I have $5? That's like what we were doing, and they weren't thinking about the business model. They don't know any better. And so I'm always a little, I think it's important to talk about that stuff because it can be predatory and annoying.
Yeah.
This guy must have a cheat on because he just bounced off that rock and didn't die and use his thing.
Oh, did he use his shield at the very last second?
He might have. It didn't look like it. I don't know.
If you're really good, because the shield only lasts for so long.
Yeah, that's the point of it. You got to time it or else it's stupid.
He's probably a really good player and just very conservative. He probably knows exactly when to hit it and it probably just barely even shows up. Just enough to trick the machine into letting him play a little bit longer.
Now, let's get into a weird era. 1987 rolls around. We got a designer named Ed Rotberg and Peter Libson, who's the programmer.
Rotberg.
These guys come along and they go, hey, time to revive Asteroids and bring it to the modern day. And what you ended up with is weird. It is a game called Blasteroids, not just Blasteroids.
You did it right because it's so hard. I wanted to call it Blasteroids.
It's Blasteroids.
There is an E in between that blast and roids.
Right? Yeah, it's like short for blasting your hemorrhoids is what it is.
Yes.
Anyway.
They just put a BL at the start of Asteroids.
It is a very weird take. Now, this is lettuce. It's also, listen to the sound and you'll go, oh, this era of Atari. I'll play a bit. I mean, this sound chip, they used it for everything. Marble Madness, 720. We've talked about half these games. I mean, listen to that. That's like the same sound library as half those games. Anyway, that's firing.
Yeah.
And the explosions are that drum noise. Blasteroids is an interesting bag because I actually really like this game, but I don't consider it an Asteroids game. I consider it a weird experiment.
First of all, it's no longer vector. It's raster graphics, right?
Yep. Pre-rendered raster graphics, I should mention. So these rotating looking images of an asteroid, is a little pre-rendered roll animation that they just repeat over and over. Yeah. And it works. I mean, it's fine. Visually, it's kind of cool. But it's weird.
This is 6 years after Deluxe, right? Yeah. So it's like, you would say 87, you said? Is that when this is?
87, correct. Yep.
87. So 6 years after. So we only had 1 year between Asteroids and Asteroids Deluxe. They just improved upon it, wanted to capture a little more money. And here it's like many years later, and we've moved well past the simple geometrics of the vector graphics of the first one. And we've got energy conservation. So you got to like blow up asteroids and collect energy. Because you can transform your ship into three different forms.
Yep.
You got one that's kind of fast, one that's kind of fat and slower, but has better shield. One's got better firepower, and all of that consumes energy in different ways. Plus you have automatic shield. So if you like run into something, it might bump you across the screen. And once your shields deplete, and of course you get destroyed, more complex, shooting and scoring. You're still shooting larger meteors and making them smaller, and there's still ships that come in. But you also have this overworld where you're mapping through like sectors. So it's laid out in like a grid, and you can kind of choose a path, but you basically have to clear all of the grid before you get to a boss.
You just
battle.
Get to choose where you start on the grid and go next. And yeah, but it's still, you still have to clear it all to get to the boss. And the boss is like the first one anyway, is that big green thing, whatever that is.
The boss is great. He's like, I think he's like this big, he's like a bigger asteroid, and he's got goofy eyes, and he's got like asteroid shooter pods on him. Like it looks like he's creating all the asteroids, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's like Lord Asteroid. He makes the asteroids.
Yeah, he's just crapping them out.
Yep. Here's an asteroid. Enjoy. Yeah, like he's weird as hell. And the whole vibe of the game is actually pretty weird. But there's a ton of variety. The only real complaints I have about control wise is the medium and large ships have the physics momentum, the inertia. The little teeny fighter ship has none, and it really, to me, that is annoying because it's like,
right.
Well, I was just moving kind of cool. Now I'm a little ship, and while I have more bullets, I move weird, and so I have to retrain my head to go, you're not going to drift. You're going to stop like on a dime with that thing. But it did have power-ups that you were unique. They had ways of getting more energy because you needed – oh, that's the other thing. You needed energy. And if you ran out of energy, you were toast, so you had to always grab these little energy balls.
It's so aggravating because if you get really close to a sector, if you get really close to finishing it, and you get a little warp at the very end. So you've cleared the screen, but you have to still fly to the warp.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. If you clear everything, the warp shows up so you can warp to the next sector and you can't quite make it.
Yep.
You sputter along and you just go boom.
It's also got one of my least favorite things in any video games. This includes modern ones. I can't stand games where a tutorial point stops everything dead in its tracks and makes you read it and won't let you skip it. I hate it, especially. Yeah, no, you get into the arcade, you put your quarter in, you play your game. The first thing when you get your first little energy ball, you'll hit it and everything stops and goes, you need energy to do shit. And then you get a wane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it'll finally fade away and go away. And now you're back to action. Fine. But the next time I go to the arcade, I got to do that every time. I play this game every time.
Yeah. Every time, because it don't know you. It doesn't know that you're, it doesn't have those save states. It doesn't know who this is.
Really bugged me.
We haven't even talked about, that was probably one of the biggest thing about Asteroids. Totally forgot to mention it. I mean, the first Asteroids, one of the biggest things they had was the ability to do the top 10 scores with the three letter initials. And so people love that crap. It's like, oh, competition. And the top three scores, I think on Asteroids, or might have been Asteroids Deluxe, are perma-saved, essentially. So even if you lose power, you still have those top three. So, but the top 10 could get, you could, like, the bottom seven of the top 10.
Yeah, it's like George's Frogger machine he's trying to get across the street on batteries.
Yeah.
It's like that. It was the only way we could, unless they put a little chip, a little memory thing in there. We had no way of flexing forever, you know?
Yes.
We were just screwed. We would be like, oh, I promise I got the high score on Frogger. Well, where is it? Well, I don't know. They must have shut it off. That was the life we lived, dude.
Yes.
There was no good permanent, like, oh, look at this guy just shitting out asteroids.
Oh, yeah, this is just the guy. He's just shitting out asteroids. He's this weird looking green guy, and he's just, what is it, a space wolf? What is he like?
He is, dude.
I love it.
Oh, there it is. Another tutorial. Thank you.
Okay,
pause everything.
Oh, you gotta shoot his little meteor pods. Then you get sucked into the warps. I forgot about that. When you first start the Blastroids, the first thing you gotta do is choose your difficulty level.
Yeah.
So this has got a lot of stuff. We've learned a lot of stuff since 81 and you know, adding stuff to games.
Pretty inventive though. Like this kind of an open world mission structure. This didn't exist before this. So you know,
no, it didn't.
I'll give it credit. I think it deserves it.
Yeah. Bad thing is, you've probably never played this at the arcade. There was only 2,000 of these made.
Yeah.
It did terrible.
They have one in the Vegas place we do our arcade competition for TMS Vegas every year. They have one. It was broken last time, but they usually have one there.
You may have played it elsewhere. You may have emulated it. There may be. I can't remember. I didn't see it in any collections anywhere, but I'm not saying it's not
out. It's on my it shipped with my Ambernic.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was on there. That ROM was, I should say.
Yeah.
Do you see the leaked SP version of the Ambernic, by the way?
Did you see that? I did. So if you haven't seen Ambernic, the RG35XX, the one that we've been using for a couple of years now, had a couple upgrades. Last year we got a plus, which added Wi-Fi, and now there's a new 2024 model that just came out. And now they've announced, kind of following up with Miyu, recently announced a clamshell type SP, Nintendo SP type. So now Ambernic is on board as well. So when this thing comes out, I'm ordering immediately, just like I said about the Miyu.
No hesitation. I will be getting that thing.
You got to get it and you got to take care of it because the hinge is going to be shit. These people that have small teams.
They're so hard. You are so convinced that the hinge is going to be bad. I hope it's not.
It's going to work, but it's not going to be durable. It takes a lot of research to make a good hinge. And I just don't, as fast as Ambernic moves with all these new devices they bring out and no more than they really sell, it's a kind of a small market. I don't think they're going to have the research in it to make a reliable hinge. I just don't think it's going to happen. So you're going to have to get this thing, you have to be real careful with it. And it's going to be great though.
Yep.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. We don't have a date yet though. It got leaked. So we don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
Another quick mention of YouTube's TNT Amusements Incorporated. Please follow that channel. They got rad restoration stuff, arcade machine stuff.
Those people are so fun too. It is like, you know, we talked about here, if we had enough money, we would start our own, you know, arcade retro thing. And that's kind of how these guys are. It kind of reminds me of all those shows that you used to see on what's the one where it's a pawn shop. Pawn Stars
is the one you're thinking of.
It reminds me of that kind of charm without all the assholery.
Yeah.
So they're fun, and they kind of walk through stuff, and they kind of give you the stories of you know, the restorations and that kind of stuff. And it's really great personalities, a bunch of fun people over there.
That's awesome. One other little reminder too, if you want to emulate it, great. These games we've talked about today, you can get them in real arcades, of course, plenty of Asteroids 1 cabinets out there, and Deluxe for that matter. However, if you're like, well, what's modern that I can play? So the Atari themselves put out a game called Asteroids Recharged. This was part of a series of recharged, quote unquote, versions of old game types that they were famous for. And there's a couple of these floating around. This is one that I picked up. Runs wonderfully on a Steam Deck. And it has a couple of modes. One in particular is a classic mode that just plays like Asteroids. You'll swear this is just Asteroids with a pretty face.
Neon looking stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But, and way better sound effects. Like, I got a little audio here. Oh, that's the, hold on.
Yeah.
No, that's it. There we go.
Oh, my God, it sounds so good.
Yeah, it's got a nice vibe to it. This is a thing that is available now for very cheap. I want to say I bought it for like $5. It is...
Looks like they... Even though it looks really different, they stuck to a lot of true things. Like only... Oh, they just had a power-up.
Well, not this mode. So this is the full mode where you get power-ups and you get crazy shots. And, you know, it's a little closer to what Blastoids did. And you'll do things that are insane, like just rapid-fire machine gun, things like that.
Yeah.
But that's this mode. If you play the classic mode, you'll just
play... You only have 4 bullets on screen at a time?
Correct.
I think.
Yeah, none of this horse shit like he's doing now with like this big spread that he's doing.
Awesome.
It's really fun. Don't get me wrong. But if you're looking for that classic experience, it actually does a really good job of capturing that. And I highly recommend it. It's very good.
This is kind of more like Deluxe because Deluxe allows you, we didn't talk about that, but you do have power-ups, ships and stuff. So you kind of something here, not nearly this outrageous though.
Yeah. And they had
these kind of
power-ups. They had power-ups in the other, or in Blastoids.
The Deluxe.
Well.
Blastoids, yeah.
Yeah. Both of them did. This is just way more. And it's, like I said, cheap, available. They got a bunch of games that they did this to that are all rad. I recommend all of
maybe
them.
Maybe get it wrong. Maybe you're right. Blastoids maybe only had the one to power. So I didn't mean to back up on that. I'm sorry. I didn't want to state that incorrectly.
Well, you don't want people to rush out and buy a cabinet on eBay and find out there's no. You know, Brian lied.
Brian's guy, a big fat liar.
The guy on Twitter lied. Anyway, it's very cool. Go play it. Go find it. It's on Steam. It's on consoles. It's on phones, I think. It's called Asteroids Recharged. It's very cool.
Yeah, there's several. Watch for the recharge stuff. All of it I've had so far has been good.
Well,
all the recharge things.
There you go. Asteroids. Watch out for them. Now this.
Destroy it.
Whoop.
Destroy it.
I don't know why I did that. That was a glitch. We're going to talk about guessing our game. Wait, where's my ex-chicken?
Ex-chicken.
There it is. We're going to, what was I saying? We're going to watch, or we're going to do a game. We're going to play a game. We're going to try to guess each other's game. It's called Guess My Game. And I'm going to talk about a game first, about a platform and a year. And then Brian's going to choose from 5 answers, which one is correct. All right, Brian, here is the sound of my game that was on the arcade machines. It was in the arcade. It's a terrible way of saying it. And the year was 1991. Are you ready?
Yes, give me the arcade 1991, Scott.
91 arcade, here we go. All right. There's your idea. And you can list it as much as you want, but here are your options. Again, 91 arcade. We have A, Dragon Saber. B, Sunset Riders.
Right.
C, Street Fighter II, The World Warrior.
Ooh.
Or D, Escape Kids.
You made that last one up, right?
No, that's a real game.
Escape Kids.
Might be this game.
Where are they escaping from?
I'm not telling you. You don't get to know.
A, Dragon Saber. B, Sunset Rider. C, Street Fighter 2, The World Warrior. D, Escape Kids. I am going to get rid of Escape Kids. I don't believe it's that. Dragon Saber. Pretty sure it's not that. It's going to be B or C, Sunset Riders or Street Fighter 2, The World Warrior. It sounds like Sunset Riders because it's a game I've played before, wherever you're playing. I don't even remember playing Street Fighter 2, The World Warrior. So I'm going to go with B, Sunset Riders.
Is it B, Sunset Riders? Let's find out. Judges, is it? That is correct, Brian. That is correct. That is Sunset Riders, and it is an awesome game if you've never played it.
Sunset Riders.
If I would have given, I would have given it away if I'd have said, if I'd have played the very first part of the intro, because it sounds like an old spaghetti western.
Yeah. It's very recognizable, and I've, like I said, I played a ton of this game.
I think I have that right.
Talked about Sunset Riders.
Whoa, hold on. Let's see if I have this. Is this it? Oh yeah, listen to this intro. You got it. Oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah, love it.
See this whole bit? See, that would have been too easy. Too freaking easy.
Yes, it would have been.
All right, tell me about yours. What do you got?
I'm a few years before you. Still at the arcade, though. Arcade games are always good to listen to. Now, this game also made it to other systems, but that's just a little extra tip. You're welcome. But this was at the arcade, the one I did audio for, and it's from 1988, about 3 years before your game, which is a sexy game. Sexy game.
Riders, but all right.
Yeah, mine's 1988, though.
All right, 88. Let's play it, and then we'll hear my choices. Here we go. Play it. Why aren't you playing?
Your choices.
Yeah, tell me my choices. What do we got here?
Are going to be A, Tubing, B, 88 Games, C, Power Drift, D, Truxton.
I think that's Tubing, but let me think about it for a second.
Also, 88 Games sound is known as Konami Games 88, I think.
So that's when you spin a guy around on a tube, I think. I think this is Tubing. Is it Tubing?
Are you thinking it's Grubin Tubing?
It's Grubin Tubing.
And not Truxton? Are you sure?
Not Truxton. I don't even know what that is.
All right.
What is it? Is it? Is it Tubing?
It's Tubing. You got it.
Yeah. It's that blah, 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 blah thing. That's what gives it away from me.
Yeah. I almost went with the second. That was the first song. And I almost went with the second one. I said, that's kind of unfair. He might be able to get the Tubing thing. I didn't want to make it too hard.
Right. No, look, Tubing. I was a huge fan of Tubing. I played that game, put quarters in that thing. Fun. I thought Tubing was great. So it was immediately sounded familiar. And also that fake water sound, which I sort of picked up.
Yeah.
But, I'm actually showing Sunset Riders. I meant to be showing too. Sunset
Riders, which is a great looking
this
game.
This art, dude, is so dumb. I freaking love it so freaking much.
So good, though. Steve.
And Bob. Anyway, there you go. That's we both did good.
Yeah, did good.
Nobody lost. Well, you didn't get this. Aren't we good?
Oh, that's too bad.
Nobody won that, or nobody got that. Nicely done, everybody. Yeah, we're also going to now hear some feedback from people.
Welcome to the treasure room.
All right. Quick, looks like a text here from Jeff M. Jeff M. wrote in. He's also known as Mouse Divided.
Mouse Divided. I like that.
Isn't that a great name? Yeah. Awesome. I love that. I like that. Anyway, he wrote into 801-471-0462 and said some asteroids trivia in the subject. Something I learned in my mathematics education journey is that asteroids is played on something called a flat torus. A torus is a topological surface resembling a donut or bagel that has a lot of mathematical properties used in chemistry and physics. The bagel-like shape explains how the ship in asteroids appears on opposite sides of the screen with the same trajectory as it disappears. This screen side swapping phenomenon would be very different if the playing space were a sphere or simply a rectangle. Love the show, Jeff.
Interesting.
I had no freaking idea that that was the case.
Perhaps that was why I had a donut joke in the beginning of my intro.
Oh, perhaps that's why you did. Torus spelled T-O-R-U-S, chat room, not like the car. Not T-A-R or T-A-U-R-U-S.
Yeah, no, that's crap. This is like, but yeah, I used to love, I think that was the first game, Asteroids is the first game that I recognized that your character felt like it was free flight, go anywhere. It could go anywhere. Yep. There was no edge of screen because you would just, pop another area.
Yep, and real quick, for those who don't know what this looks like, if you've done any 3D modeling, I'll pull up an example.
Yeah.
There it is right there. You often start with these. They're called primitives, and this is one of the primitives. You start with a ring, and you build something on top of it or part of it or whatever, and that's called a torus. I did know that.
I didn't call it a donut.
I knew that, but I didn't know that that's how the game was organized, but it makes sense. Yeah. The bullet would go. So I'm looking at this roundness, right? So let's pull this up. You see the bullet go. It wraps immediately And then they speed up the process of it reappearing on the other side. But that way, the trajectory is dead on the other side.
This is a much better explanation than what I read.
Do you,
Jeff M., you nailed it.
Do you this think is Pac-Man that as well? Because Pac-Man also comes across the other side. Is that also a big Taurus?
Oh,
well,
you know, that's a good question.
Curious about
that's
that.
A good question.
Curious. Let us know.
Curious and curious.
You know what I like? Smart listeners. That's what I like.
Smart.
More of those, please. If send us your own smart thoughts at 801-471-0462. You can email us at playretroshow@gmail.com. It's time for this.
Ludicrous kill.
It's time for the Unreal Report. If you, at least I think we are. Are we playing tonight? Are we doing a little UTK4 tonight?
That's the question. What do you think?
I mean, I want to play, but I don't know what everyone else is doing. I mean,
well, let's see how the schedule looks and let's start hitting some people up and find out.
All right, we'll find out. But anyway,
I wasn't sure with Easter weekend and everything. I wasn't sure if anybody had,
if anyone was around. Like, yeah, I don't.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I mean, I would love to, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to force myself on others. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, tell me what's going on. Any big shakeups in the top tens or anything?
Hey, that's a great question. So let's take a look. We did play a little bit of Unreal Tournament 99 this past Monday. Me and Amy and Scott Fletcher stopped by. It fell through. He did something else. And then Scott Johnson had the Monday shows. He's got a bad case of the Monday.
I got a bad case of the Monday shows.
Only thing that really happened is I'm still ahead of you. And Zio has moved into number 6. They were pretty much locked in at the top 5. Top 5 is Sikreki, Upright Knight, Flap Jackson, Denier, and Surge. And Zio has went ahead of me and you both. And so me and you were sitting at 7 and 8. That's a bunch of crap. And I played Monday. What's my excuse?
Yeah, well, you got none. But look at this 2K4 thing. I bumped up a spot. I'm now 4th, right? I think. Let's see.
You are up to 3 somehow. I don't know how you did it. I don't know if you played off when I wasn't playing or if I just sucked it.
It was just last week. It's just our last game, and I played
that's
them.
That's right. You were. Oh, there was definitely one round, if not several, that you just dominated on. Sikreki, number 1, Try to Kill Everyone, number 2, Scott at 3 with Frog Pants, 4, Brack Flack, and Brian Shock Effect at number 5, still in the top 5. Myself don't
I mind, don't know how I catch up, because look at this. Okay, so Try to Kill Everyone is reachable. I can do that. That's about 200 points score higher. Yes. I can do that. Sikreki though, it's 2018. Freaking F that.
About it is secrecy, by the way, but we do call it Sikreki. We call him Sikreki.
Yeah, or Sikreki. It's a she, right?
And we determine. Yes, right. I don't know. I'm saying the individual who plays Sikreki. Secrecy.
Or Sikreki is all I'm ever going to say. Sikreki.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. They've been playing about almost the exact amount of time I've played. Almost, just barely over that. And they're almost 1.5 times higher on the... No, I'm sorry. They're not double my score. What are they? They're more than double my score.
Sikreki does have an Achilles heel.
What's that?
If it's a simple map, like Facing Worlds, everything kind of becomes even. But if it's a complex map, they rock it because they have a really good memory for the maps.
Yeah, they know all the hot points, the choke points, the objective stuff, all that. You're right. That is a thing.
Yes.
They absolutely destroyed us on assault maps. Just wrecked us.
Wrecked us.
But when we played although they ended up pulling it out in the end of that Facing Worlds game and broke the tie. But on Facing Worlds, I felt like I had a chance. I felt like I had a chance.
Yeah.
So freaking Sikreki, dude. Gosh dang it.
Yeah. Dang it.
I refuse to say Sikreki. I'm only going to say Sikreki until I beat them.
That's right. And then I will show you the respect you deserve.
Thank you. If you want to play with us or are curious about this or just want to get into the 99 or the 2K4 thing, go on over to retrogib.com. That's RETROGIB.com. And all the details are there. Mm. Also, we got some patrons to mention this week.
Oh, nice.
Check this out. Patreon.com/playretro. Stuart J. Moore. Aaron Tagonist.
It looks like that's going to be something. Aaron
Tagonist.
You're right. Tagonist.
Well, there's no K.
If you subscribe, we can also butcher your name.
And Michael Furlong. I think I may have mentioned him twice, but that's fine. We love him. No commercials ever. Pre-show content every week. Please join us and support your favorite retro podcast. That's available right there, right now at patreon.com/playretro. Our next game will be Beneath a Steel Sky.
Ooh, I've been wanting to play that forever. I hear it's like a 7-hour game. Perfect.
Yeah, that's how much hours have. Nice and long, short, depending how you look at it.
Short.
You want to help Robert Foster find himself in Union City? You want to play a really great old school adventure? Good news.
Yes.
We're going to talk about it. I've never played it.
A fascist AI. I haven't either, but it is on sale on goodoldgames.com, which is how I picked it up and plan on playing it.
It's free on Steam. Get it for free.
Is it free on Steam? Oh, yeah. It's free. It's you're right. It's free. They're free at both places. Look at that.
Point and click. The thing. It'll play on Windows. Let's see. Or Linux, looks like. Classic. What else? I'm just trying to find something else here. Basically, think of it as... I don't know, Blade Runner meets sort of,
Blade Runner. There you go.
I don't know what to compare it to. Anyway,
Blade Runner is perfect.
I never played it back then. I was always jealous of everybody who got to play it. And I just never did.
Yeah. And it's a series because they got some DLC content, and that is definitely on sale at 75% off. And I actually did pick up, Lure of the Temptress, which was one of the ones that I had seen people talking about recently. And I was like, oh, gotta check that out. Interested.
Yep. I'm going to play this. I'm going to go get it on Steam. Revolution. I will play the shit out of this before we talk about it because I want to know more. And we will talk about why it's considered one of the great point-and-click adventures of all time.
Yes.
That's Beneath a Steel Sky. Be happy, PC people. We're coming back for you. Went from the arcade right to you. That is going to do it for us. Big thanks, everybody, for being here. If you'd like to email us, once again, playretroshow@gmail.com. Send those texts and voicemails to 801-471-0462. And for everything else, you can find us at frogpants.com/playretro. That'll do it for us. Go play something retro. And we'll see you next time.
Bye now.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Asteroid punch.
Storage asteroid.
Asteroid storm.
Forget the asteroid.
Asteroid.
Asteroid B612.
Asteroid approaches.
On the asteroid.
What storage asteroid?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.